If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Hi there. Welcome aboard the Wednesday, January 22nd, 2014 edition of Radio Free America on ConservativeNationMedia.com. Duke Brooks here. Thanks very much for being along tonight. You may recall last week we had some Skype-related issues, and so this week I am doing things using the most reliable phone that there is now, which is the cell phone I refer to as the not-so-smartphone. I don't know. You know, I mean, sometimes I think that the technology is just running away with things. Generally speaking, it's not having a particularly good effect on society in general. There's a lot of technology that does, but I'm beginning to think that a lot of it absolutely does not. We are going to talk about this. Tonight's show, shortly after 9, Brad Bierman will be here to discuss last week's American Conference and National Conference championship games and the prospects for the Super Bowl, which obviously is coming up in approximately 10 or 11 days. And, you know, I am not the world's biggest sports fan. Last night, I went on Jennifer Meadows' program, Grit and Grace, and somebody mentioned a name, which I believe is Peyton Manning. Is that right? If somebody, correct me if I'm wrong, 718-305-7176. I had heard the guy's name, but I thought he was a politician. I had no idea. I just don't pay very much attention to it. Now, the good thing about having Brad on the air is that Brad makes it interesting. Brad has been a professional broadcast sports correspondent, writer, sports director, analyst, a real pro, at least since around 1982 or I think it was 82 when Brad started first working at the radio station in Syracuse where I was working. And Brad I'm not going to remind Brad about his very first day on the air, but I may as well tell you at that station, WSYR, which is, at least it was, one of the truly great radio stations in this country, a major, major station, had been on the air since 1922, I think. When I was up there, the station was 60 years old. It will be 100 years old in about 8 years. I mean, it's really amazing, an incredible radio station. These were the days before deregulation. These were the days when a radio station actually meant something. Things are changing. You know, I spoke to my old boss at DBC, Delmarva Broadcasting, the other day, which is a great company, and he said within 20 years there aren't going to be any transmitters. Everything is going to be over the Internet. Well, that could be true. Maybe it is. Maybe not. I don't know. We'll see, but here I am on the Internet. 718-305-7176 is the number anyway. Syracuse, as you are aware, has some of the worst weather in the country. And on that particular morning, my job was to fly the station traffic helicopter, which I had come in 2 years earlier and started talking to them about this idea. 3 years earlier, whenever it will end. Yeah, anyway, so I'm flying the traffic helicopter, and it's morning drive, and this must have been in sometime in the winter in Syracuse, which means basically every month except July and August. But I digress. So it's winter. The weather is horrible. The roads are a mess. There are major accidents everywhere. And Brad was starting that morning. I had never met him. I wasn't aware that anybody had met him. And I'm flying around in the chopper, and they're saying to me, Duke, we just heard about an accident 690 in Janesville. You know, there's another one at Solve a Process. Oh, good grief. Now they're calling for one Route 57 at Hyde's Corner. Get up there. See what you know, that's what it was like. So I keep hearing this voice on the radio, Brad to base, Brad to base. And he was going to go on the air. He had just started working for us. And Brad sounded like he was completely and totally unaware of what was happening and had no idea what to do. He just sounded like he didn't have the slightest clue what was going on. And even Bill Wyatt, who was the assistant news director, and Jack Sheehan at the time, who was the morning anchor, maybe it was the other way around, I forget, but these guys were to, and Margaret Durante and all these other people in the news department, everybody was out of the building except George Roberts and Dave White. These guys are in the newsroom. We had a full-scale newsroom back then in market number 80 or 83 or 91 or whatever, sir, 190, I forget. But we had a full-scale news department, but almost everybody was out on the roads covering the streets, and the weather was flyable, which in a light helicopter means that there was weather. So I went flying. I mean, I didn't bother checking the weather because I was going anyway. You know, what's the point? But anyway, we hear Brad on the radio, Brad to base, what do I do? Who is that? Blah, blah, blah. And I heard Bill and Jack talking back and forth, saying things like, you got to be kidding me. Who is this guy? That's a good grief. Well, just get him on and get him off real quick. Then they threw it to Brad, and it was something like New York State troopers are reporting a major accident on Route 690 just south of Carrier Circle. And now let's go to WSYR's Brad Bierman, who is on the scene. Brad, and I could almost feel everybody cringing. And at that moment, Brad Bierman put out the best local radio report anybody had ever heard. I mean, he was unbelievable. And he sounded like he was doing a live actuality for CBS News. It was unreal. And everybody was just, and even Bill Wyatt and Jack Sheehan were making comments to Brad like, Brad, that was excellent, off the air. But it was beautiful. So anyway, Brad's real interest was sports. And he started in the news department. A year or so later, he was the full-time sports reporter working with Doug Logan, who was the sports director. And the next thing was Doug Logan left, and then Brad is made the acting sports director, and then he was the sports director, and I think he stayed there until I left in 83, and I think Brad stayed there until 87 or something, and then he got involved in some sports network or something, and he was always into computers, and he always recognized the internet, and earlier than anybody else, Brad was talking about the internet in 1991 or 92, Brad was talking about the internet as if it was 2010. I mean, he was just way, way ahead of every curve on the internet. It's pretty amazing. But anyway, Brad does have a way of making sports interesting, even for non-sports guys like me. And if there was ever a non-sports guy, frankly, I am it. I'm also hoping that Michael Smith, who is the chairman of our network, and who until not too long ago, was the host of Soldier of Patriotism on Sundays, that Michael will be calling in, and here's the reason why. As you are aware, this fall, the governor of Texas will be elected. Now, I do not know an awful lot about Texas. I've been there. I was there last Labor Day, as you'll recall. Stayed with Mike's folks in Fort Worth. Absolutely wonderful. Just, I had a wonderful time. Texas was outstanding. But their politics in Texas are a little bit different than most other places in the country. From what Michael tells me, the real power, Texas, in terms of its government, is with the lieutenant governor, because the lieutenant governor is the president of the Texas Senate, just as the vice president of the United States is the president of the United States Senate. And the people running for governor of Texas is this woman named Wendy Davis, I think her name is. And Wendy Davis came to national prominence several months ago when she filibustered in the Texas legislature for 11 hours. That's an accomplishment. You know, I don't have any problem with that. But the subject of her filibuster was how opposed she was to a law in Texas that opposed abortion. I'm conservative, and I'm not really sure that abortion is the best thing for our country, for society, for people in general. I just don't think that it is. Anyway, she's pro-abortion. Most people in Texas are pro-life. Remember, Texas has a very long history of Mexican people living there. It used to be part of Mexico. Many of them simply stayed. They really didn't care who was going to govern them as long as they could do their farming and, you know, the other things that they were used to. They really didn't care. This is going back to the 1840s, obviously. 170 years ago, I think the Battle of the Alamo, 1846, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, so Wendy Davis captured the national attention to some extent by doing that. She is very, very liberal, and she's running against a guy whose name is Greg Abbott. I believe Greg Abbott is the Attorney General of Texas. And I believe that he is in a wheelchair for some reason. I'm not entirely sure why. There is one thing that I am absolutely sure of, aside from the fact that if I lived in Texas, I would not be voting for Wendy, and that is that we here at conservativenationmedia.com start off the work week every Monday with a bang, essentially, in a big way. It's Inside Tennessee with Dave Vance. Now, even if you are not from the Volunteer State, which is what Tennessee is known as since the War of 1812, the issues that affect Tennessee happen to be spreading all over America. David brings his veterans insight and the most informative guests to Inside Tennessee every Monday, so make sure to check him out. It is brought to you by the Tennessee Action Council, a bunch of good guys there in the Volunteer State. Inside Tennessee, Mondays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. All right, so you've got 718-305-7176. The chat room is open for business right now, by the way. For those of you who are listening live, I see a couple of friendly faces in there already. Here's another one for you. If you're listening on a podcast at some point after 8:14 p.m. Eastern Time on the night of Wednesday, January 22nd, 2014, then I would imagine that the chat room information is about as irrelevant to you as it could possibly be, but I digress. So you've got Wendy Davis, who seems to be the titular candidate for governor of Texas, and you have Greg Abbott, this guy that's in a wheelchair. I don't know why he's in a wheelchair. Anyway, here is the point. Some folks on TV earlier today brought this out, and I thought that this was really very, very interesting. A lot of politicians in America have or will develop or are interested in developing what many would refer to as a log cabin story. And this goes back to the fact that Abraham Lincoln, who many consider to be our country's greatest president in history, I consider him to be about the third best president in our country's history, but I digress. Anyway, Lincoln obviously was born in a log cabin. Most people believe that he was born in a log cabin in Kentucky. Many years ago, when I lived in North Carolina, Professor Dr. Blah, blah, blah at the University of North Carolina, Wayne, or whatever it was, had published a paper which had been picked up by the Fayetteville Observer Times or the Raleigh whatever, indicating that his research led him to conclude that Abraham Lincoln was actually born in extreme western North Carolina, somewhere near the Kentucky border. I don't know, but in any event, Abraham Lincoln was born in a log cabin. That is now a legendary American political fact. The guy that actually was able to keep the country together, reunite the nation, defeat the upstart Southerners, the rebellious Southerners. During the war, incidentally, it was not referred to as the Civil War. It was called the Rebellion. Speaking of the Civil War, about an hour from now, we'll be talking about the history of the Civil War, as we always do, 15 minutes after the top of the second hour of Radio Free America, because we are 150 years past the Civil War at this point. But in any event, Wendy Davis, to establish what most people would refer to as a log cabin history in her political life. And now it has come out that some of the things that she has said in her description of her earlier life and her education and where she lived, apparently those things are not quite true. In any event, it's about 18 minutes after the hour. We're going to take a quick break. Your calls are coming up. This is Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com. Stay right where you are.
80 million voters can pull the wrong lever, and it's still the wrong lever.
What does it take to be the leader in production systems technology? To be the one company that solves production problems at any plant, for any product, and with any technology? It takes a 30-year record of success. It takes total mastery of complex technologies with a history of delivering success every time, without fail. Only one company can claim that high ground in manufacturing line optimization, data automation, and systems integration, and that's Philadelphia Control Systems. In factories worldwide, Philadelphia Control Systems programs, software, and engineering solutions deliver optimal performance and output flow with a record that can't be matched. Any plant, any product, any technology. Philadelphia Control Systems, the leader in production automation since 1982. 800-335-9811. PCSforAutomation.com. That's PCS, the number 4, automation.com.
One goat can make the difference between nourishment and hunger. One goat can make the difference between poverty and sustained income. In the war-torn areas of southern Sudan, one goat can make the difference between life and death. Find out how you can help. Visit goatsfortheoldgoat.org. That's goats, FORTheOldGoat.org. Fighting hunger, one goat at a time.
Hello, I am Robert Garding of the New Wise Conservatism Radio Show, heard on Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 Central, through conservativenationmedia.com. Being on the air since 2007 from behind the silver CNN microphone of freedom, we've helped people become more informed to keep socialists out of the White House and Congress. But that work isn't over yet. Tune in Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on CNN for the New Wise Conservatism Radio Show, the voice of reason in our unreasonable world.
You're listening to Duke Brooks on conservativenationradio.org.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back. This is Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com. And Greg Duran is still saying conservativenationradio.org. We are going to be changing that at some point soon. Greg is Bing Fisher's buddy from their band days. Bing Fisher is a pretty serious rock and roller and a great guy. You should listen to his program on Sundays. I'll be telling you about that in about 20 minutes or so. It's called American by Design. Bing's an engineer and loves his country, kind of like me. You know, although last night I took an entire raft of you-know-what from Michael Bankhead, who is the owner of Highlands Militaria. You hear us talking about them quite a bit on our network. Great guy, great store. Mike spent most of his career in the airborne, and he was giving me a raft of you-know-what because I said to him at a point during the conversation last night, Michael, you talked the talk and walked the walk. I never served my country. And I've got to be honest with you, that's a guilt thing that is hanging over my head now. And at the age of almost 59, I don't think that there's anything that I can do to change that. But Mike said to me, I don't want to hear that stuff. I don't want to hear that stuff. He said, you are serving your country now by talking about the issues that matter from the correct perspective. And he then said, you also served your country when you helped me make the transition, meaning Mike, from being full-time active duty to being a civilian in Fayetteville back in 98 and 99. He said, I really didn't know how to make that transition, and if it had to have been for you meaning me, I wouldn't have been. Anyway, so all right, so we've got Wendy Davis down there in Texas, wants to be governor. She said, some people refer to her as Abortion Barbie because she is tall and slender and blonde and very good looking and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I don't think she's as good looking as the Prime Minister of Denmark. That woman is pretty much like a serious hot. I mean, she's from Denmark. Come on. Neither one of them are as pretty as my girlfriend is, that's for sure. However, Wendy Davis asserted that she had lived in a trailer, that she had gone through Harvard Law School. She made a couple of other assertions. She said she was living in a trailer when she was 19 or something, and she brought up her child there. As it turns out, she stayed for a couple of months in a trailer while her then husband, a wealthy guy, was having their house built. And he is the one that paid for her education at Harvard and Harvard Law School. You know, there some of the bones were correct, but none of the other tissue was in her discussion of what her past was like. When this sort of thing happens and there's an eruption of you said A, that you were A and B, but actually you were C and D or whatever, when that happens, other people begin looking into things. And, you know, if it were a, well, for instance, let's take Sarah Palin and Chris Christie as examples. Chris Christie is a Republican. There's some people that would refer to him as a rhino. I'm not necessarily sure that I would characterize him in that way. He does have some stances that I would classify without any question as being not conservative, but I would not refer to him as a rhino. I don't know, maybe. Anyway, now that there have been revelations that he had, or someone, as it turns out, was somebody on his staff, had apparently deliberately decided to back up traffic into Fort Lee, New Jersey, which is a town on exit 18. I know because I used to live there when I was between the ages of about 6 and 8 or 9. Yeah, 6 or, yeah, I think that we moved to Fort Lee in 1961, and we moved into Manhattan in 1964. We moved out of Forest Hills to Fort Lee, and we were right on the, just about right on the George Washington Bridge. I mean, the building was called 2175 Hudson Terrace, right on the Hudson River, just a couple of hundred yards north of the George Washington Bridge, and we had a balcony on the northernmost and the top floor of this building, and the view off that balcony looking directly across the Hudson right at Manhattan with the George Washington Bridge. This, it was stunning. I'll bet that apartment probably is going for, oh, heck, I don't know. That's got to be a $5,000 a month apartment now. I mean, it's the view alone, spectacular. As I recall, it was three bedrooms. Well, in any event, Christie's deputy chief of staff or acting chief deputy assistant or whatever that woman was, Bridget something or other, she apparently was out to get the mayor of Fort Lee, New Jersey. She arranged for the New Jersey Transportation Authorities and the Port of New York Authority to close a couple of eastbound lanes on the George Washington Bridge that backed up traffic into Fort Lee, New Jersey. And this was discovered, and Chris Christie, of course, he is a guy that is, he has one of these larger-than-life personalities. He's a big guy. He's almost a William Howard Taft, if you know what I mean. And he found out about this, and he fired his campaign manager, who had something to do with it. He fired his deputy chief of staff, who apparently was the one that originated the email. And now, because he's a Republican, the liberal media is piling on. I mean, they know that this moment, at this moment, that Chris Christie, governor of New Jersey, former United States attorney, is the only real threat to Hillary Clinton at the moment. It's not even decided if Hillary is going to run, but you better believe the liberal activists who work in journalism, that's different from actually being a journalist, but the liberal activists that work in journalism want to clear the way for Hillary Clinton, and they want to make sure that Chris Christie is hobbled in some way, and they are out to get it. I mean, there's no question. They are looking all over the place to try to find additional, and he has been harmed by this. Frankly, I believe Governor Christie, I believe that the governor is too smart to do something or order vengeance like that himself. I've got some more facts about it. But I'm presuming, it is 30 minutes after the hour, incidentally, I'm presuming that if you, like me, are conservative, you are listening to Conservative Nation Radio, conservativenationmedia.com for a reason. And that is that you probably love America just like we do, and you don't want to get caught short in case that leftist government in D.C. drops the ball and leaves our country and your family unable to get the basics of life in a government-generated emergency. Now, since that's the case, you're going to want a Supply Depot to get everything from patriotic gear to survival necessities to outfit and protect you and your family, and your pipeline to those essentials is right here at conservativenationmedia.com. Just go to the website and click on the Patriot Depot banner. It'll take you to the world's best-known warehouse for all your conservative and emergency survival needs. Wave your flag and be ready for whatever the future holds starting right now. Just go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the Patriot Depot banner to join the conservative revolution. This is where America always wins. This is Radio Free America and conservativenationmedia.com. Duke Brooks here. Your calls, more on Chris Christie, Wendy Davis, all that stuff coming up after this, so don't go away.
Hey, everybody. Rachel Ray here. Nothing puts a bigger smile on my face than cooking up a big meal for family and friends. But there's not enough room at my table for the 17 million kids in America who are struggling with hunger. These children, that's one out of every five, often have to skip meals because there's just nothing to eat in the kitchen. Yet there's more than enough healthy, nutritious food produced right here in America to feed every last hungry child. If only there was a way to get it to them. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks collects surplus food give hope to hungry kids and their families all across our country. But they can't do it without your help. Join me in supporting Feeding America at your local food bank and at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Driving has a rhythm all its own. Don't wreck it with a text. Before you get behind the wheel, silence your phone. Or better yet, designate a texter. For more text-free driving tips, visit stoptextstopwrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Hi, I'm Kathy Henners, your host on Daily Roll Call on conservativenationmedia.com. Please join me each Friday as we talk about subjects like the Muslim Brotherhood, their goals, their agenda, and how it affects our schools, our law enforcement, and our communities. As a retired police officer, I'll give you an inside look into this issue and so much more. Don't miss it. Fridays, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, right here on conservativenationmedia.com.
If you're wondering where Rush goes to do his show prep, you found it. You're listening to Duke Brooks on conservativenationradio.org.
Welcome back. This is conservativenationmedia.com, Radio Free America. Duke Brooks here. Now, let me make a minor correction. Sadly, Kathy Henners is no longer with the network. We will be hearing from Kathy from time to time. Kathy is a former career police officer, and I think she now, I would say that Kathy, and I don't know if she would specifically agree with this or not, but basically Kathy is now in the counterintelligence business. And Kathy briefs law enforcement officials and teaches classes about the Mohammedan incursion into this country. And she is going all over the country and doing that, so she is simply no longer able to be with us. I'm not really sure how that promo snuck in there. I think I know how it did. As a matter of fact, I know how it did, and it was my fault. I'm such a bad, bad, bad radio host. 718-305-7176 is the number. At Radio Free America, we have been talking about Wendy Davis in Texas, Chris Christie in New Jersey. Now the media is going to virtually every Democrat elected official in the state of New Jersey at any level. The deputy assistant dog catcher of Barnegat Bay or Ventnor and Margate or wherever, and asking them, essentially, tell us all of the horrible things that Chris Christie has done to you since you have been in office. And some of them have said, including this one woman who is the mayor of Hoboken, the mayor or the mayoress? Mayorette? I don't know. Madam Mayor? Your honoress? I don't know. But she is the mayor of Hoboken. Hoboken is this kind of city slash town. Look, you can say what you want about New Jersey, one of the original 13 colonies, the Garden State, blah, 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 blah. But the fact of the matter is New Jersey, the entire state, is a suburb of New York City, a suburb of Philadelphia, and at the end of the day, look, I lived in New Jersey, okay? I learned how to ride a bicycle in New Jersey. I don't have anything against Jersey, but facts are facts. You know, it almost doesn't have its own identity. It has the highest taxes in the United States. People are leaving New Jersey. And they are moving to places like Delaware, where I live, because the taxes are low. I mean, who wouldn't? But in any event, they spoke to the mayor of Hoboken, New Jersey, who is this woman that looks to be in her late 30s or something, and then she's articulate, and she's a Democrat. And the initial story that they got on MSNBC was that the governor, Chris Christie, had refused to give her Superstorm Hurricane Sandy relief funds, and that was ostensibly because she is a Democrat. And then as soon as that story got out there, it began to fall apart, and then it disappeared altogether. Apparently, the facts are, she requested $127 million for Hurricane Sandy cleanup in her city of Hoboken, New Jersey. She did not get $127 million. And you want to know why? Because the total amount of money that was made available by federal taxpayers to the state of New Jersey for Sandy cleanup was $300 million. And this one mayor with this one town in New Jersey wanted nearly half of that money. And the governor said, I'm sorry, I can't do that. I think he allocated a couple of million. I'm not positive, but this really annoyed her. She wanted almost half that money, by God, you know, that sort of thing. So she had apparently, either on Friday or Monday or something, had just a couple of days ago, had let it become known that the governor, a Republican, a mean, nasty, fat Republican, a bully, horrible, give her the money because she's a Democrat. Then some people, and MSNBC went with it. Aha! Aha! We got him! We got him! That's it? He's dead now. He won't be in Hillary's way. Oh, we got him. We're going to get him. We're going to rip him apart. And then they found out what the real story was and what the real numbers were, and that thing just died. It just went away. It was gone. All right? Now, the other, the bridge gate that they're calling it, GWB gate or something like that, that guy, the mayor of Fort Lee, New Jersey, is a guy named Sokolovich, or now that's Carl Malden, Skolnick or something. You know, the story that the liberal media was putting out there was that he had been invited to endorse Governor Christie, did not endorse the governor, he refused to endorse the governor, and as a result, the governor decided he was going to get revenge, he was going to bully him, and he was going to back up traffic into Fort Lee by shutting down eastbound lanes of the GWB, the George Washington Bridge, ostensibly under the ruse that this was actually being done for purposes of a traffic study. As it turned out, the mayor of Fort Lee was not asked to endorse Chris Christie. Chris Christie did not ask him for his endorsement. And apparently his campaign manager did. And apparently his campaign manager asked the mayor, "Will you endorse my boss, Governor Christie?" And the mayor said no, or the mayor said, "I'll get back to you," or something of that nature. And a couple of days later came the infamous email from Christie's campaign manager to Christie's deputy chief of staff that said something like, "Time for some traffic problems in Fort Lee," to which Bridget, the deputy chief of staff, replied with an email that said something like, "I hear ya." And a couple of days later, you know, there they were. So in any event, that is the actual story. And I do believe that Governor Christie surrounded himself with some people who are petty, determined to wreak vengeance upon anyone who gets in their way. There are a lot of people in politics that are like this. Listen, let me tell you, I have been professionally involved, essentially, in politics in Delaware for 3 years now. And at the local level, you don't see a lot of people like that. I have not seen very many like that at the state level, but there are a couple. One guy was a Republican. This is a guy who simply believes that if he is not in charge, the entire thing is corrupt. If things are not done his way, then everybody is out to get him. And what happened, he decided one day he was going to simply up and leave the Republican Party. He was going to join this 12th party in Delaware. There are 26 recognized political parties in Delaware. They include things like the American Party, the Federalist Party, the Citizens Party, the Liberal Party, the New Frontier Party. I mean, who founded it? What was that, JFK or something? Here's one called the Nonpartisan Party, the Greens, the Working Families, something called a Delaware Party. These are all actual political parties that are recognized in the state of Delaware. There is a Socialist Workers Party in Delaware. There is the Blue Enigma Party in Delaware. I'm not making this up. There is a party, and a political party in Delaware that is called the Blue Enigma Party. What on earth? And there is the Rights of Life Party, the Natural Law Party, the National Unity Party, the National Statesman Party, the U.S. Taxpayers Party, and there is this so-called independent party in Delaware. Who the heck knows what the – anyway, the guy that left the Republican Party here, he ran for office for the county council. He was beaten by about 500 votes, which is – that's not bad. He actually did very well, but he – and I went around and campaigned with the guy. I'm not even going to mention his name. Because I thought he was a friend, and as it turns out, he's not. He's just a, you know, a vengeful kind of individual who, you know, I have no idea. He's kind of paranoid. But anyway, the guy, instead of calling me, calling my boss, John Riley, or calling, I guess John is kind of my boss's boss, calling my boss, Fred, and saying, guys, you know, I'm sorry, but I'm leaving the Republican Party. What he did is he just calls up a local radio station, and he makes his announcement. And then he starts trying to bully other people. He now has a title as Director of Special Operations at this non-party that apparently statewide has less than 1,000 people in it. Who the heck knows? You know, politics... it can get, you know, listen, people that are focused on imposing their will on other people, they're going to go into politics, and very often if things do not go their way, not always and not everybody, but very often if things do not go their way, they will try to, quote, get people. And we have seen this. You know, Hillary Clinton has an enemies list. I'm not really sure that that is as big a deal as people think it is, but I do believe that it belies the ideas of those who believe that Hillary Clinton is this pure as the driven snow, as faultless as Caesar's wife. You know, one of these people, that's not what she is. And a lot of people know that that is not what she is. I think if you were to ask Dick Morris what the Clintons are really like, of course, he was their main domestic polling and advisor for a long time during their first term, up until about 95, I think, when he got dalliance in Washington, D.C. with a... what I think could euphemistically be referred to as a professional lady, if you know what I mean. But anyway, I digress. Hillary Clinton would not be where she is if she did not know exactly when and how to bring out the long knives. And I guarantee you, a major level politician like that is somebody that if you cross them, they're going to do things to try to make your life miserable, if they possibly can. In any event, that's, you know, that's just, we're going to continue to talk about this. I do need to take a break. And, you know, you've been listening for a long time, and our company, conservativenationmedia.com, is growing. And we could not think of a better way to expand our lineup, which we have, than to give our very own Uncle Bing Fisher his very own show. Bing brings his engineer's insight and love of America to American by Design, Sunday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central, on conservativenationmedia.com. So stay with us 7 days a week. Since we are making some big changes and we are just getting started, American by Design with Bing Fisher, Sundays at 6 Eastern, 5 Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. 718-305-7176 is the number here. And we are going to take a brief break now, then continue this. You know, where I'm really going with the Chris Christie thing is that the leftist media is, they are functioning strictly now to try to make sure that Democrats always hold the White House, the House of Representatives, the Senate, and thereby, by extension, they will always hold the Supreme Court. And that is what they're all about. And they are out to get Chris Christie, and they are going to beat that dead horse until it's dead. Then they're going to beat it again. So, you know, anyway, now the New Jersey legislature, the assembly it's called there, have realigned a particular committee so that there are, I think, five Democrats, including the chair, and two Republicans on the committee. And this is just to make sure that they are able to either completely besmirch Chris Christie, or they may try to just impeach him because they don't like him. Who knows? I mean, I would hope that some Italians in New Jersey will get together and start saying this is just racism, anti-Italian racism. You know, I would hope that probably wouldn't get any traction. Break now. More of your calls coming up. Don't go away.
The Internet's official Rhino Hunting Safari.
Whether you're on active duty, a veteran, or just admire American Armed Forces, there's no better place to get the widest variety of militaria than at Highlands Militaria. Highlands Militaria is one of America's premier distributors of Fox tactical gear and outdoor products. Veteran-owned and operated, Highlands Militaria offers new and used uniforms and insignia from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and today, with an emphasis on airborne and special operations insignia, gear, collectibles, and uniforms. If you need to replace a cherished badge or unit patch, or just want to gear up for your next outdoor adventure, go to Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria, where you'll find the best supply of the military gear you need. Shipping is always free with one-day handling time, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria. And thank you for your service.
Hi, this is Ronnie Wood of the Stones for Rad. You know it's okay to rock and roll and party, because I do it all the time. Just let someone else do the driving. That's what I do. Remember, rock lives, and you should too. Please don't drink and drive.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, Rad, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hello, I'm Jennifer Meadows, your host on Grit and Grace. Please join us every Tuesday night from 10 to 12 Eastern for an honest look at the top political and cultural issues that are affecting Americans today. That's Grit and Grace for conservative analysis that is smart and entertaining. Tuesdays, 9 to 11 p.m. Central, 10 to 12 Eastern on conservativenationmedia.com.
Listening to Duke Brooks on conservativenationradio.org.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back. This is Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com. Duke Brooks here, 718-305-7176 is the number. We've been talking about the Chris Christie situation and the so-called Bridgegate, so-called scandal, the quote, scandal, unquote, which, you know, turns out, I mean, I'm not really entirely sure what the functional definition of scandal is. I mean, I had always thought that a scandal was something that takes place when an otherwise well-thought-of public figure is embroiled in some kind of personal, salacious, libidinous sort of conduct. I'm not even, you know, I think maybe the Rob Ford, Mayor Rob Ford of Toronto, Canada, maybe that is a scandal. I think it probably is. But he's still in office. Not really sure how that guy got elected mayor, but those Canadians, you know, heck, they'll do almost a, you know, who knows, I mean, in any event, nobody has ever accused Chris Christie of sleeping with anybody. The former governor of New Jersey, a guy named Garvey or McGarvey from 8 or 9 years ago or something, that guy was one of these, he was just a very handsome guy. And I looked at him and I thought, well, you know, I don't know what this guy is really all about. He had a beautiful wife and they had children, but the guy was gay. And now look, person, in today's day and age, in this day and age, I got to be honest with you, I'm not really sure what the point is of concealing that from anybody. All right, this was 8 or 10 years ago, whenever it was, maybe back then. But the guy, you know, was married, and I think he resigned from office. And I think basically what happened, one of the things, is that apparently credible stories had been going around that he had his wife was in the hospital giving birth to one of their children, and he had ordered one of the New Jersey state troopers to drive him to a certain rest stop on the New Jersey Turnpike where he would go into the men's room at the Howard Johnson's or the Saverin or whatever it was in there, you know, at the Molly Pitcher exit or the Thomas Alva Edison service station or whatever, and he would go in there and he would have anonymous, promiscuous, homosexual sex with other guys of that same that were in there. And you know what? It's not the gay aspect of that. I don't know anybody that would find the gay aspect today to be particularly troubling. It is the aspect that the man's wife was having a child and he was out fooling around, okay? And he was having the state troopers. Anyway, he resigned from office. I kind of felt sorry for the guy's wife, you know? I mean, what a just a horrible thing to for her to have to go. I have no idea. Then at one point he said that he was thinking of going to seminary and going into the ministry. I don't think they were Catholic, but for some reason that just, you know, I mean, I don't get it. I just don't get it. That is what I would call a scandal, okay? Bill Clinton with Monica Lewinsky, I would call that a scandal. Of course, as usual, the cover-up is worse than the actual event that they're trying to cover up. What I'm trying to cover up is the fact that apparently fish is being cooked in the kitchen at this moment. Did you not cook the salmon? Oh, you were not gonna, okay, all right. Well, all right. Linda is aware that I mentioned to her earlier tonight, she said, you know, salmon doesn't smell quite that bad like a lot of fish does, and she might be right, but I told her that salmon had been voted in the top 10 most horrible things imaginable that a human being could be forced to smell, taste, or otherwise withstand by I Hate Fish magazine, okay? But in any event, so that's basically a good thing. Break coming up at the top of this hour, about 30 seconds to go. Incidentally, tonight, we do not have talk radio news service from Jeff Holtzman. Jeff is setting up somewhere in Washington, D.C. for a radio row at some conference. It isn't CPAC. That is in March. The chances are very, very good that yours truly will be going to CPAC and perhaps even broadcasting from there. In any event, a couple of commercials here, a couple of brief announcements, and No, actually, I am sorry. That is actually an error. I started the wrong piece of audio right there. Let me see if I can actually find the right one. I should be able to. I did upload it, but sadly, it did not upload. And I'm not really sure why it did not upload, but it did not. So we will ID the station, and we will then take it from there, and we'll pick you up on the other side. Oh, let's see. You know, I am so sorry about this, but...
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Okay, every once in a while I can make things work out right. You know, as you're aware, there are a lot of people out there that don't care for BTR, Blog Talk Radio, for a lot of various different reasons. I'm not necessarily sure that I'm one of them. I absolutely did cut the correct stop set for the top of the hour, minus the news from Jeff Holtzman, but for some reason it did not actually upload to BTR, and I'm not really sure why it did not. So anyway, we don't have news tonight, but there are a couple of very interesting things going on the Drudge Report. The number here, in fact, is 718-305-7176. Let me just, I want to just kind of blow through a couple of headlines here on Drudge Report. I think the Drudge Report is one of the best internet websites for kind of hard-hitting news. You know, I'm not going to read all these things, but their headline on Drudge right now, and it is 2 minutes after 9 on Wednesday, the 22nd of January 2014. The headline is, the Iranians are saying, quote, "We did not agree to dismantle anything," unquote. All right, well, hey, it takes a guy like John Kerry filling in for somebody like Hillary Clinton to come up with a deal that the Iranians can just infamously and with abject hubris ignore. All right, and that's what they're doing. And the Iranians know that Obama is weak and John Kerry is weak, and they don't particularly like this kind. I'm kind of surprised that John Kerry didn't try to marry Hanoi Chain. You know, Kerry is a guy that goes around, marries rich women. That's what he does. And I'm kind of surprised that he did not marry Hanoi Jane, because the two of them have the exact same outlook. They both hate America. I just don't trust them. The tax-free National Football League pays the commissioner $29.5 million a year. This is their second headline. Just as an aside, almost $30 million a year. I mean, if the guy gets paid twice a month, he's going to get a check for about $1 million. Please. I mean, seriously. You know, on the one hand, I am definitely somebody that says, look, if the market bears level of compensation, that level of pay, if the market bears it, then the market bears it. What are you going to do? You know, on the other hand, there is something about that to me just seems to be absurd. Commissioner of the National Football League getting paid $29.5 million a year, I got to be honest with you, is that job really worth that much money? I don't know. I guess somebody's willing to pay him. But the NFL is a nonprofit organization. Their teams are taxed, but they're not. Not really sure how that works, but even still, $29.5 million a year to be the commissioner of the NFL. No wonder Condoleezza Rice wants that job. Obviously pays more than being the chancellor of Stanford. Half of the fans say that, quote, supernatural, unquote, forces are in play during sports events. Tom Brady says, and misspeaking, quote, I could care less about watching Super Bowl, unquote. Tom, listen, you're a great quarterback. You know, a lot of people think that the New England Patriots are an excellent team and that your leadership has been wonderful. What do I know? But I do know that the proper phrase is, I couldn't care less about watching the Super Bowl or about this or about that. Think this through with me for a moment. If you think I'm off base, hey, the number is 718-305-7176. Maybe, well, let's bring in Brad Bierman. Brad, welcome aboard. I'm talking about Tom Brady. How you doing, buddy?
Good, Duke. And yourself?
No, just fine. Tom Brady is apparently quoted as having recently said that I could care less about watching the Super Bowl, and I was simply pointing out that the proper phrase to indicate that you have zero interest in something is I couldn't care less about
Correct.
Watching
Correct, and he's a sore loser, I guess.
Okay, there you go. Now, all right, before we get into the game itself, let's talk about Richard Sherman and the wide receiver named Crabtree. Richard Sherman, Crabtree was with San Francisco and Richard Sherman with the Seattle Seahawks, correct?
Yes.
All right. What is that situation all about?
That was the clinching play of the game on Sunday, in which the 49ers were looking to try to win the game, driving deep into Seattle territory late in the ball game. And the pass from 49er quarterback Kaepernick to Michael Crabtree, the wide receiver, was at the last moment deflected by the hand of Richard Sherman, making a great defensive play. And so that clinched the game for Seattle. All they had to do was snap the ball a couple times and run out the clock. And then afterwards, in a post-game interview on the field immediately after the game with Fox Sports, Sherman, just being honest, ranting and raving about how good he was, and he was kind of commenting about how he felt Crabtree had disrespected him in some tweets in the week leading up to the game, and in the end that he was showing him who was the best by the play he made on the field.
Now, Richard Sherman is, he has a position that is called cornerback. Is that right?
Yes, cornerback.
All right. And
in the
that
defensive
is a
backfield,
defensive...
there are two cornerbacks and two safeties.
Okay. And if you are a safety, you can be either a safety or a free safety, or are those two completely different positions?
Well, they're two different positions. The free safety, the term isn't used as much now in contemporary football, but they have different terminology for that player. But you're kind of alluding to the one player as free safety or the last defense, the one player who's furthest back in the backfield.
Okay. Now,
on
one of the games on Sunday, maybe it was an earlier elimination game, the kicker kicked off the ball. The receiver got it and started running, and nobody could catch this guy. I even forget what game it is, but I do remember the commentary was something along the lines of the kicker is, you know, his job is to kick the ball. It is not to make tackles. He is not trained in making tackles. That's not his job, and he couldn't make that tackle. Does that sound familiar? I mean,
that's often the case. Not a particular example, but you know, some kickers really relish the opportunity to tackle and hit. Some are certainly bigger than others, But you're right. They're so fragile in that they're not used to the contact. And the speed of the game is, of course, so fast in real time.
Yeah.
And, you know, they are, you know, could get injuries, sustain injuries, if they're not careful in trying to make a tackle. And especially they're prone to injuries sometimes when they're blocked. A kicker might be going downfield on a kickoff, and then sometimes unsuspected to the kicker, they're hit from behind or the side and get hurt that way. But, you know, Duke, with the Super Bowl coming up in New Jersey a week from Sunday, I wanted to mention on the air what I had mentioned to you off the air about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, that the rules and regulations for spectators attending the Super Bowl at MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford, New Jersey, are that nobody is permitted to walk onto the premises. You must either arrive by automobile being driven by somebody or yourself, but your vehicle must stay in the parking lot during the duration of the game, or take a New Jersey Transit train from the Secaucus train station, or take what's called the Fan Express bus, which will make 9 stops in the New York metropolitan area. Those are the only 3 ways in which spectators will be allowed onto the premises. There are some hotels on Patterson Plank Road just north of the stadium complex where it's actually possible for people to walk, but that will not be allowed by Homeland Security, of course, the Super Bowl being a federal-level security event.
So in
just
other
very
words,
interesting
it's
in
not...
how they're regulating the entrance and the mandatory one-way in, and vehicles must remain on premises. They're not allowed to drop off a spectator. And then
right.
they jack the parking prices up, $150 for a vehicle, $350 for a bus.
Now, if you the worst seat at the Super Bowl is all the way up in the rafters, right, all the way at the top in the freezing cold, and that's $1,500, isn't it?
I think there's some at $1,250, but not a lot. But, yeah, you're essentially at $1,500, $1,750, and then, of course, the club seating that much more. And so often with Super Bowls, they're just sold as packages with the game tickets included. But, of course, the big money for these operators is in the hotel, transportation, and the amenities.
Well, a person, if they're going to go to the Super Bowl, it's and they want to have something like halfway decent seats, it sounds to me like they need to budget $5,000 to $10,000 per person just to go to the Super Bowl.
And to have a good time and to be comfortable, certainly in this cold weather event, yes. I would say $5,000 at the low end, yes.
It's pretty amazing. That is pretty amazing.
It's
well,
turned
I
into,
guess,
you know, the national sports football day holiday, if you will, quasi-holiday
with that
6:30 Eastern kickoff. Restaurants, pizza places, wings place do their best business of the year in one day.
Oh,
it's just incredible.
Yeah, it is a national break, basically. I mean, it is the focus of so many people's attention. I mean, certainly I'll watch the Super Bowl. I'm hoping that my best friend Bill McGarry, who you know, will be able to come down to Lewis, Delaware from King of Prussia, and we're going to have guacamole and chili dogs and, you know, all kinds of things. And, you know, it's almost a ritual at this point. But in this game, somebody mentioned to me earlier today in the Super Bowl that both of the teams can put points up on the board. It's going to be a question of whose defense is going to be better at stopping the other guy. Do you concur with that?
Yes, I would concur with that because both teams have, you know, great quarterbacks. Of course, Hall of Famer Peyton Manning with Denver and one of the rising stars in the NFL and Russell Wilson with Seattle. So I would concur with that. And Seattle's defense has been great all season. It's really what got them there to the Super Bowl. And what more can you say about a Peyton Manning? I mean, some are talking that if he were to win the game, would retire and go out on top and was named Sportsman of the Year by Sports Illustrated in December and kind of would be an incredible way to cap, you know, what's been an incredible career. But I do concur with that, Duke, and that, you know, the old adage, offense sells tickets, but defense wins games.
Peyton Manning is Archie Manning, Eli Manning, or do I have those names right?
Archie Manning is the patriarch, the father, and his sons are Peyton Manning and Eli Manning.
And all of them football players?
Yes, and they have another brother, Cooper Manning, whose football career was derailed due to a condition. I can't specifically remember the details, but he had a medical condition that did not allow him to continue his football career after high school.
Now, in terms of exciting Super Bowls or meaningful Super Bowls, of course, this game hasn't been played yet, but what is your outlook? Do you think that people 5, 10, 20 years from now are going to say that 2014 Seattle and, Colorado game, boy, that was really something? Or, you know, what do you think is going to happen?
I think they will think it's something because I think it has a good chance to be Peyton Manning's last game if they win, and I think he's going to get a touchdown, maybe not in late-minute dramatic fashion, but lead a drive with, you know, maybe 3-4 minutes to go to put his team ahead and give Seattle one more opportunity, but Denver will stop them. So I think they will be talking about it because of Manning, and I think they'll also always be talking about it because all eyes are going to be on the event for being the first cold weather outdoor game. The previous record low temperature for a Super Bowl was 39 degrees for Super Bowl VI in New Orleans when Dallas beat Miami. That was a Super Bowl VIII in Houston, 39 degrees, 2 years later. So this is going to be likely, you know, colder than that, and I think they'll be talking about it primarily for that reason. And also, Duke, I think if this goes off successfully, mostly every other cold weather city in the NFL is going to want a Super Bowl.
Well, I don't know. Has there ever been a game played in temperatures as cold as the so-called Ice Bowl when the Dallas Cowboys came to Green Bay, I think in 1967 or something?
67 minus 13 air temperature, yes.
You know, a guy in the stands died of exposure, a fan, an older guy died of exposure during that game.
Certainly can believe it. It doesn't take long at those temperatures if you're not dressed properly and have heat exiting your body.
Yeah, it's, well, you know, people are going to show up there. They're going to be ready. But, I'm wondering why, and I'm presuming the regulations you mentioned, the rules in place about how you can get to the stadium, were put in effect not by the NFL or by the Meadowlands Stadium Authority, but by the United States Department of Homeland Security. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Do you have any idea what their rationale for this is?
Simply for security, because the events in New York City area, you know, for the first time ever, just to be able to keep everything in control and order in which they want to do it. There's 26,000 parking spaces at the stadium. Only 13,000, half, will be used. They set up an outer security perimeter so that once you exit the parking area, you then go through an initial security screening before you even get to the stadium gates. They are advising fans for a 6:30 kickoff to be getting to the stadium 1-2 o'clock.
There's probably going to be a lot of entertainment on the field beforehand anyway, just to keep the people occupied, you know.
Sure.
But I would imagine, I mean, you know, basically at the end of the day, I would think that something like 95% of the people that are attending that game are in the top 1% of the country. I mean, you know, for charging, if you want a box, I understand it's $1 million. Is that right?
Yeah, but, you know, Super Bowl is certainly about high rollers. There's just no doubt about it because this is the annual event where the NFL and the teams, you know, reward you know, sponsors and clients and best-selling salespeople and all of those mm-hmm. things, and then all of the media involved and the media sales size involved, the fact that it's going to be in New York City, I mean, it's just, you know, adding all of that element to it. The NFL's headquarters are in New York City, and they finally get to literally host a Super Bowl, you know, 8 miles away. But the other fandom that really attends these games are the lifelong fans of the Seattle Seahawks and Denver Broncos, the most loyal fans who kind of have budgeted, you know, even if they're, you know, of a lower income level, you know, have budgeted, or, you know, some folks have been known to, you know, go into savings and whatnot for what they might perceive to be a once-in-a-generation or even a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
How many Super Bowls have you been to?
One.
Which one?
Super Bowl V in Miami in 1970 that was known as the Blunder Bowl.
So you were like, what, 10?
I was in seventh grade.
All right,
myself.
So you were 12, something like that. Okay. But back then, it wasn't really considered to be the huge monster world-level powerhouse that it is today, right?
Certainly not. And, in fact, the Super Bowl moniker only was used starting in the third game. The first two were known as the NFL-AFL World Championship game.
Mm-hmm.
So it certainly was not in the mainstream. I'd say that really didn't start happening till about the 79 Super Bowl, the second one in two years between Dallas and Pittsburgh that CBS telecasted. I think that was one of the turning point years because it still didn't even gain a lot of momentum after the famous Joe Namath Super Bowl III.
I remember watching that.
That
was the Baltimore Colts. Yep, that was the Baltimore Colts versus the New York Jets. And as you're aware, my mom's family is from Baltimore, so we all went down to Baltimore to watch that game, and I was not very happy. You know,
no, that was one of the biggest upsets, and really set the AFL on its the radar and put the game into a different perspective. But yeah, it took about a decade from then to really get more into the mainstream. And then, of course, you know, once the bidding wars escalated for TV rights and then Fox got involved in 1994, it's all changed.
Mm. It is just – now, I mentioned earlier there is a news story that I think his name is Roger Goodell, correct? The
commissioner of
the NFL?
Yes, his father was Charles Goodell, a senator of New York State, just after Robert Kennedy.
Oh, okay.
Charles Goodell was his father, U.S. senator from New York.
Okay, it's kind of like the late former baseball commissioner, Bart Giamatti,
who had been the president of
Yale. His son Paul is the actor, but, I mean, these are very high-profile jobs, but Goodell is being paid $29.5 million a year?
No different than any other top CEO of a multi-billion-dollar international conglomerate.
Well, that's definitely one way of looking at it. Obviously, there are a lot of people out there that think that...
Well, his bosses, that being the 32 NFL owners, a lot of money, and he's simply being compensated a percentage of the money he makes them.
That's pretty much the way I look at it, you know, from strictly an intellectual point of view. On the other hand, I think it says as much about how our actual currency has been inflated and cheapened over the years. $29.5 million. Who is the highest paid player in the NFL?
But, you know, I look at that as no different than when actors are negotiating $20 million a picture. I mean, and with back-end royalties on ticket sales, I mean, it's really no different. Or when an athlete is negotiating, you know, what they're doing. I mean, I think it's the same when, you know, recently the CEO of Yahoo let go of the person she brought in there as her top lieutenant, and it's going to cost her $43 million in guaranteed compensation. So, I mean, this is business, right? I mean, this happens every day in the business world, and And, you know, what Roger Goodell, I mean, Bud Selig, $18 million for Major League Baseball. Again, he works at the behest of the owners. It's his job to make them rich. And if they do their job well, they're handsomely compensated for it like anybody else.
Who is the highest paid player in the NFL?
God, I would probably assume. That's a good question. Off the top of my head, it would be hard for me to say. It's a quarterback, probably one of the quarterbacks, whether that's
More than likely.
Andrew Luck,
yeah.
Who just signed the second year with Indianapolis. I don't think Manning is the highest. Tom Brady, obviously, is going to be pretty high up there, but I'm probably missing a name or two. But, you know, you're
what's
in the four or five million, a year range.
Coaches are
making,
$8 million, $10 million a year, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
What is the compensation? I mean, playing in the Super Bowl obviously means something, and the players get a huge bonus for being in or winning in the Super Bowl, don't they?
Yeah, it's a well into the six figures. It may even be $500,000 to the winner, $250,000 to the loser.
How many officials? What constitutes a squad of officials, a crew of officials? How many in the officials will be at the Super Bowl?
Well, I think there were eight off the top of my head, all the line judge, back judge, umpire, ref.
Referee,
Judge. And then they have backups for a game like that in case one gets hurt or ill so that they
and
wouldn't
those
have
guys,
to support.
Yeah, those guys are being paid. They're probably making $50,000 each to officiate at the Super Bowl, huh?
Yeah, I would say probably at least that, maybe even more, yeah. You know, base game official NFL, I'm thinking at least five.
$5,000 per game, right?
Yes.
They called out one of the guys on TV. I forget which game it was, but they mentioned this guy. I've forgotten his name. It was kind of an unusual name, but he is also apparently a National Basketball Association referee. So
there's
crossover
to NBA and college basketball because it fits their schedules. Yes, that is common.
I wonder if anybody is a baseball umpire and an NFL official.
No, I don't.
No, I didn't think so.
There's none of those that I can think of. Those seasons cross, too much crossover.
Okay. Now, after the Super Bowl, the next interesting thing, of course, there is the Pro Bowl. But
that's this weekend.
It's before the Super Bowl this year. Okay.
They switched that, and this is the first year. It's in Hawaii on Sunday. But this is the first year in which they're not separating American Conference, National Conference. They're actually having two players, Hall of Famers Jerry Rice and Deion Sanders, draft a team. Each of them are drafting a team, and those teams will play each other. So you will actually have players, that are on the same team that are mixed over from each conference.
I'm sure you've heard the latest thing from the NFL.
Which by the way, Duke, I don't think will work. It's kind of like a live fantasy football game, and it's such a meaningless exhibition anyway. I think this change is probably going to make it quicker to the demise of the Pro Bowl.
The latest thing that I have heard is that the NFL is talking about the idea of eliminating the extra point after a touchdown. Have you heard this?
Yes, I have. It's gimmicky. It's just a playing with the rules 21st century gimmick, in my opinion. Sure, understandably, the extra point kick is a 98% success rate, but it's not 100. It's not 100.
Right.
It's not completely guaranteed automatic. And
no, I've
that
seen
play
extra point kicks be batted down.
Playoff appearances.
I've seen extra point attempts be batted down very rarely, as you have mentioned, but I've also seen teams try to go for 2 points, passing it or running it in, And very often that is not successful.
47% success rate on two-point conversions.
There you go. There you go, Mr. Stack.
47 versus 98. But as you know, with that change, they're contemplating making a touchdown worth 7 points. If you should choose and have the option to go for a two-point conversion, you could either get 8 if you make it or 6 if you do not make it.
Yeah, very the idea of subtracting a point, I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine.
Gimmicky. It's just
a
gimmick.
Exactly.
I don't like it at all.
Yeah. I don't
know. It kind of defeats the whole
purpose
of professional sports. You've earned a point, but now we're going to take it away from you? I mean, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Very weird. Very, very strange. Now, after the Super Bowl, I would imagine the next thing on the horizon for people who are very serious devotees of the game is keeping an eye on the draft, and that's normally in March, isn't it?
April.
April? Okay.
Yes.
Who are the teams that came in last, I guess they're going to have their shot to try to pick up the Heisman Trophy winner for the year, right?
Yes, possibly. He's one of the quarterbacks, Johnny Manziel of Texas A&M,
that's being
considered by the Houston Texans, who have the first pick, yes.
His name came up a couple of weeks ago in connection with something. It had nothing to do with football. It was some kind of an off-campus football scandal. Did it have something to do with Florida State or
I think
something.
What you're thinking of is the current Heisman Trophy winner, Jameis Winston, who was being investigated for sexual assault.
Yeah. All
and
right.
those the district attorney declined to press charges.
That's because the district attorney went to Florida State, and in Tallahassee, that school's football team is the entire reason for people's existence. Like, as you said to me one time about the Clemson Tigers at Death Valley, it is a religion for them, right? They are very focused on it. Manziel was from Texas, right?
He was Texas A&M, yes.
Okay, all right.
And he won the Heisman Trophy the year before.
And at A&M and at Texas, they take football very, very, very seriously, don't they?
365 days a year.
Good grief. Unbelievable. All right, what is your final call for this game coming up, the Super Bowl?
I'm going to pick Denver to edge Seattle 37-32.
Very interesting call. 37-32, Denver over Seattle. That's your call. I'm sure Bill McGarry is listening. Bill is a huge football fan, as you're aware. And, well, listen, thank you for spending some time with me tonight, my friend. I do hope to be speaking with you some more. Let's do it again at some point after the game. And maybe we can speak about baseball prospects in the spring and the NFL draft.
I really enjoy that, Duke. We'll talk post-Super Bowl, wrap up that game, and look ahead to baseball spring training.
All right, pal. Have a great night, buddy. And tell Cindy I said hi.
Will do. You too now. Take care.
See you soon. Bye-bye. All righty. Brad Bierman there. Brad, as I mentioned earlier in this program, is a very, very serious sports expert, and, you know, he absolutely knows this game the way he can rattle off those statistics, I mean, forget about it. Even if his prediction does not come out exactly correct, I'm not going to hold him accountable because he is still more right than he is wrong about calling sports games. And beyond, I hope nobody is going to be making any bets. I guess I just don't believe in bets. I mean, it's horrible if you lose. It's got to be a nightmare, almost as bad a nightmare that will happen to you if you happen to be the victim of identity theft. If it does happen to you, it might take you months or even longer to recover from it. That is, if you can recover at all. So here's the deal. Don't let it happen to you. Put yourself in advance and sign up today with LifeLock. LifeLock, as you're aware, is a lot more than just your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps to protect your personal information using a combination of data surveillance techniques and outstanding member service, 24/7, 365. There's really nothing that comes close to LifeLock. So if you want to protect your identity, and you should, using LifeLock, you get 10% off of their great service. Go to our website, conservativenationmedia.com, and click on the LifeLock banner. You will be very, very glad that you did. The network may not cover all transactions, and the scope may vary. Warrior calls coming up after this, so don't go away.
Unexpected reactions to smart financial decisions brought to you by feedthepig.org.
Well, I finally did it. I improved my credit score.
You're kidding, right?
No.
How are we supposed to be the bad boys of electrosynth pop if you're out there being responsible? The band is about to be discovered. This is our year.
Yeah, you've been saying that for a while now.
You think anyone in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame was worried about their credit score?
I never really thought that
we were... Of course they weren't. Rock stars aren't supposed to think about that kind of stuff. We're supposed to think about how many guitars we've smashed, write aggressively sensitive power ballads, start questionable fashion trends, tragically break up and blame creative differences.
All right, just... I thought maybe it was time to take control of my finances, you know? Start using a budget. Get out of debt. Set some goals.
A budget? Debt? Set some goals? Listen, I knew that we'd have our creative differences, but I was hoping they'd involve a little more scandal.
When it comes to financial stability, don't get left behind. Get tools and tips for saving at feedthepig.org. This message brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
Adopting a new pet is a rewarding experience. And Shelter Pets make super pets. Your new best friend will steal your heart, bring you happiness, and enrich your life for years to come. You can make a difference in the life of an animal. Adopt and bring home a Shelter Pet today. To find out more, visit theshelterpetproject.org. This message has been brought to you by the Humane Society of the United States, Maddie's Fund, and the Ad Council.
Molon LeVay Challenge Coins and Wares. Similar to challenge coins used by various military units, these MLCCW coins are ideal for anyone that champions the right to keep and bear arms by highlighting the Second Amendment and the Greek phrase, Molon LeVay, which translated means, come and take them. Come check out our pro-freedom, pro-liberty, and pro-Second Amendment coins and shirts at MLCCW.com. That's MLCCW.com.
Penny Lane, there is a bar to show you photographs. And every head he has a place to tell. And all the people at Goldman's go stop and say hello.
Hey, liberals, why don't you try rooting for your own damn country for a change?
Welcome back to Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com. Duke Brooks here, 718-305-7176 is the number. On this Wednesday, January 22nd, in the year of our Lord, 2014, you know, every once in a while on TV, as a matter of fact, quite often on TV and now in literature, one hears the phrase BCE, which means before the common era instead of before Christ, which is, you know, we base our modern calendar on the birth of Jesus Christ. And I believe it was Pope Clement the first, who had one of his cardinals, I believe, named Dionysius, sometime around the year 400, tried to figure out using history and, you know, what passed for history back then, when Christ was born. Now, Modern scholars, from what I understand, believe that Christ was born, in using our modern calendar, around the year 3 or 5 A.D., which means Anno Domini, or Year of Our Lord. The modern calendar is based on the birth of Jesus Christ. And now people are trying to, you know, have you noticed how people have been trying to marginalize Christianity since around September 11, 2001? People began trying to marginalize Christianity and to focus as much possible approbation as they could on Mohammedanism. This is one of the things that Mike Bankhead and I were discussing last night in that vaunted phone call that I mentioned to you earlier. And it's going to be their civilization against ours, and either Western civilization is going to win or Eastern Mohammedan civilization is going to win, one or the other. There can be no peaceful coexistence with a civilization, a way of life, a theocratic society that believes that they have a duty and an obligation, a divine right, a divine mandate from their god, the moon god of Arabia, who they call Allah, to destroy all other religions, and that's what their deal is. Kathy Hinters is going to join us at some point again. Kathy knows all about this. Somebody said to me on one occasion, I think it's when I was on WGMD, you know nothing about Islam, you know that. And I said to the person, sir or ma'am, I forget even who or what it was, I said, I know everything that there is to know about Mohammedanism, and I learned it on the morning of September 11th, 2001. Facts are facts. You know, I'm not really sure what else to say, but I digress. About a little less than 18 minutes to go in this edition of Radio Free America. Thank you very much for listening, either live or on podcast. I see a couple of folks kind of hanging out there in the chat room, and that's fine. Very often I wonder why the folks in the chat room do not call in more often. I'm not really sure what the you know, what the deal is with that, but they have, you know, the opportunity to call in. They don't necessarily have to, I suppose. But in any event, we have been speaking a little bit about Wendy Davis, who is running for governor of Texas, and her claims about when she was living in a trailer and her daughter and under what circumstances. And apparently the husband that she had, understand this correctly, he built a home for them, paid for her to go to Harvard Law School, was supporting her daughter, I think, who was a teenager at the time, and apparently the day after she graduated from Harvard, she divorced him, and I think she got the house, and he got nothing. He paid for her to, and she just, you know, apparently walked out on him, the child. She then remarried, and apparently when she decided that she was going to get involved in politics full time, she left the child from the previous marriage with the second husband and said to him something along the lines of, you are obviously a very nurturing father figure for her, and raising her is just not something that I really have the time to do now. So, you know, I'll see you, goodbye, and you get my daughter and you raise her. I'm going to get into politics and I'll see you. And that's apparently, you know, what she is like. And I certainly hope that, that now the other absurd thing about this Wendy Davis, well, we'll talk about this in a minute. You know, it should come as no surprise to anyone that our United States Constitution, which is the basis of our nation and the central core of our values as Americans, is under attack. Sometimes it seems like everybody and his brother is trying to figure out an end run around the articles and amendments of the greatest governing document of all time. Now, if you are tired of leftists and unfriendly political forces telling America that our Constitution is a mere footnote, be advised that a lot of real Americans, people like you and me, are going to come together at the Defend the Constitution rally in Waynesboro, Tennessee. It's just an hour southwest of Nashville. On the weekend of April 26th, speakers like Scotty Nell Hughes, Karen Vaughn, Joe Carr, and even our very own Kathy Hinners will be on hand. David Vance is going to be there, the host of Inside Tennessee. That's just a couple of them. Great music, great food, wonderful times will be had by all. So go to defendtheconstitutionrally.com to learn more about this upcoming great event, and I do hope to see you there. 718-305-7176 is the number. At Radio Free America here on conservativenationmedia.com. Duke Brooks is my name. Let's see. Ron, you are in the chat room. Yes. He is mentioning, Ron is mentioning that after Wendy Davis's husband, ex-husband, made the final payments on her college loan, her Harvard Law School loan or whatever, that after he made that payment for her, that's when she walked out on him. Call on in, buddy. In Alaska, it must be, what, about 1:30 or 2 o'clock in the quarter of 2 in the afternoon or something? Would love to hear from you. 718-305-7176. Call up, pal. Let's chat. Even going to give you a chance to do so. We are going to take a very brief break. More of your calls coming up. Stay right where you are.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
Peek-a-boo. Peek-a-boo. Smile.
Smile, buddy.
Come on. Smile. Oh, honey, he's still not smiling.
Maybe he's not a smiler.
Yeah. Maybe he's just not a happy baby.
Maybe he's just being a boy. You know how boys are.
Or maybe he's teething. Oh, poor baby. I think his gums hurt.
Maybe he's just tired.
Or maybe his tummy hurts. He didn't eat that much.
Maybe he's not ticklish.
You think maybe he's scared of the dog?
Maybe he'll outgrow it. Maybe it's a phase. Maybe he just doesn't like smiling.
Maybe he has autism, and we can definitely do something to help.
Maybe is all you need to find out more about autism. No big, joyful smiles by 6 months is one early sign. Learn the others at autismspeaks.org/signs or see a doctor today for an autism screening. The sooner it's diagnosed, the better. And it can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Foreclosure is hard on every member of the family, but your family is not alone. If you're struggling with your mortgage, there is help. To learn about the government's Making Home Affordable program, visit makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE to speak to a HUD-approved housing counselor. It's free of charge. Visit makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE today. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, NeighborWorks America, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Dave Vance inviting you to join me every Monday night for Inside Tennessee on conservativenationmedia.com. Even if you're not from the volunteer state, you'll want to know what's happening because one day it will affect you. Every week you'll hear interviews with experts, legislators, and citizens who are fed up and making a stand. So join us every Monday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central Time for Inside Tennessee on conservativenationmedia.com.
You're
listening to Duke Brooks on conservativenationradio.org.
I remember finding out about you. Every day my mind is all around you.
Hi, welcome back. That, of course, the great and inimitable Bad Finger, and Day After Day, being an old rock and roller, and by that I mean being somebody that always kind of liked rock and roll, especially when I was a kid, I should know, and I think this is right, that George Harrison was kind of the producer and the force behind that band. I'm not entirely sure. I believe that Phil Collins of Genesis was the force behind a spinoff band called Brand X, where Morris Pert played the percussion and Robin Lumley played the keyboards. And I met those guys, and I had a friend in college who knew them fairly well. It was a lot of fun, you know, a lot of fun. Let us bring in from way up north, north to Alaska. Boyd, how you doing, pal?
I'm not doing too bad, buddy. How
well,
are you
what's
doing?
What's going on up there? I'm doing okay. What is going on up there in Alaska, the you know, the last frontier? What's happening?
Well, we're all kind of pissed off at you people down there in the lower 48. You stole our vortex.
Oh. So now, right now in coastal Delaware in the Mid-Atlantic, it is 11 degrees Fahrenheit. What part of Alaska are you in?
Anchorage.
Okay, which is the largest city in the state, right?
Yeah, we're in what we call South Central.
Okay, now that's Anchorage is what, about 500,000 people?
Gee, I think we only have about 700,000 in the whole state. I think we're 250 to 300,000, if that.
Okay. All right. My buddy Brad Bierman, who I had on the air earlier, very serious sports expert, Brad has been to every state in the union, and he had gone up to Anchorage a couple of years ago, and I've never been to Alaska, although my girlfriend Linda tells me that she has been there. I've never been there. I would love to go. And I asked Brad what it was like. He said Anchorage was very nice. He went up there in July, so it was, you know, it was like above 40 degrees every day. And he said it's just like any other medium-sized American city. Very nice, all the amenities, everything you can want. So now, you apparently are a little more up on the Wendy Davis situation in Texas, and she is running, I guess, Greg Abbott, who is the attorney general, seems to be the guy that she'll be running against. And she blamed Greg Abbott for making the revelations about the terms under which she went to college and the child and the trailer and all that kind of stuff. And then apparently she tweeted out, Greg Abbott has not walked a mile in my shoes, but Greg Abbott, from what I understand, has been confined to a wheelchair his entire adult life. You know, this woman is just, I don't think she's going to win. What do you think?
I certainly hope not. And no, I'm not really well up on Wendy Davis as you think I am. I just know that when you had, I mean, your statement was that you made about leaving her husband after Harvard Law School was correct, but it was only after he ended up making the final payment is what I've been seeing. And I also heard tell that he had a real sneaking suspicion that that's what was going to happen when he made that final payment. And sure enough, the day after he made that payment, she filed for divorce.
Unbelievable. And, you know, these actions of hers, I can guarantee you, will be forgiven and will be explained away and will be poo-pooed and downplayed by the same people who have trotted out this absurd fabrication that Newt Gingrich's wife was laying in a hospital bed and dying of cancer when he came in to serve her divorce papers. And that's not exactly right. She did have cancer, but she's still alive, you know. Unbelievable. Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Have you always been in Alaska? Have you always lived there?
I was born in Ohio, graduated school in New Jersey, and then Milhouse grabbed me after I'd returned back to Ohio and sent me to Alaska.
What branch were you in?
Army.
What was your job?
Well,
okay.
No, I was a communications cable splicer when I went in, and that was a job they gave me. But I really didn't work cable splicing when I was in the military. I was a field wireman in an artillery battalion, Let's see, I went TDY to the ski slope for the winter, my first winter up in Fairbanks, and, you know, ran the ski lifts and the rope pulls and stuff like that. And sometime during that period, the brigade I was in was deactivated. So I ended up staying at the ski lodge for the rest of my tour.
Well, when you mentioned that Milhouse grabbed you, of course, I'm presuming that you meant President Richard M. Nixon.
Yes.
Were you in Vietnam? Did you go overseas?
No, I did not. But, that was right during the whole heat of things.
Yeah.
And they sent me to Alaska after I had asked for, you know, they asked you, what place would you like to go? And I said either Hawaii or Germany. So they sent me to Alaska.
There you go. I've heard all kinds of stories about how to make requests for certain duty stations in the military. And the place that you really, really, really want to go to is the last choice that you put, and the place that you really don't want to go to is the first choice that you put. And they say that way you're guaranteed to go where, you know, who knows. But what line of work are you in, if you don't mind my asking?
I'm still in communications.
Okay. All right. Very fine.
I've been in the same job for 40 years. I work for 5 different employers, the last of which is now AT&T or Southern Bell, who actually ended up buying AT&T.
Okay. Now then, I mentioned a few minutes ago that it was 11 degrees in Delaware. It's now 13 degrees. What kind of temperatures? We've got about 30 seconds left, but what kind of temperatures do you have up there in Anchorage right now?
Right now we're sweating our butt off at 35 degrees.
Wow.
And it's supposed to be going up to 45 tomorrow.
It's 40 degrees.
But there's probably an awful lot of snow on the ground, right?
Not much anymore.
Wow.
It's been raining and with the warm temperature that just takes the snow away. It's been a sloppy mess.
Yeah. All right. Well, have you run into, we only have a couple of seconds, but have you ever met Governor Sarah Palin?
Briefly for about 2 seconds.
Okay, well,
and then
better than
then
me.
Then she turned her back and ignored me.
Oh well, politicians go figure. Boyd, thank you for calling, my friend. And please call in next Wednesday, all right? Have a great night, sir. All righty. Thanks very much for being along this evening for Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com. And I do look forward to speaking with you again next Wednesday. Have a great week, everyone. Now, now, now.